politics. We have three of the candidates here for General Sessions Judge. We have Ms. Sonia Henderson, Tom Frost, and Kirk Catron, all becoming good friends. I've known Tom probably a little longer than there. Kirk's been with us, if you might remember, one time before. But wanted to have them on, and we've had this. We'll make seven total. There's so many running. There's nine candidates, and we're going to have the other two, Mr. Peach and Mr. Crimson, in next week. Okay? And we're going to let you get to know these folks. There's a write-up. I've got Sunday paper here from Daily News Journal, a little write-up on what they like and what they believe in and how they're going to be going and different ideas they have. And just to share with you and let you know who these fine folks are, okay? But for right now, this is the P.I. Show. My name is Edwin Lee Raymer, and yes, I am a private investigator. Welcome aboard.
You're tuned in to the P.I. program. Tips and tales from licensed, longtime private investigator Edwin Lee Raymer. Taking your phone calls and text messages at 615-893-1450 on the P.I. program.
Thank you, Dalton Barrett, on the board as usual. And this is the P.I. Show with me, Edwin Lee Raymer. This broadcast is produced at the studios of WGNS, AM 1450 and 100.5, 101.9 FM, right here in the heart of the great Volunteer State, Murfreesboro, Tennessee. You can reach us tonight and reach these three fine candidates by dialing 615-893-1450. That's 615-893-1450. You can also send a text to that number. If you do not wish to go on the air, and Dalton Barrett will be glad to take your text, we'll read it over the air and ask your respective candidate whichever one you like, or maybe have questions for all three of them. You can message me on Facebook, as many of you do during the course of the evening, at Private Investigations of Middle Tennessee, legal/law, or you can send me a text on my personal number here, 615-390-7219. Our email address is privateinvest@bellsouth.net. And again, working the board with us again, as usual, is Mr. Dalton Barrett. He will take your text, and he'll be able to, if you want to call in and leave a question with him, he'll be glad to write it down and relay it to us. Okay, let's introduce these fine folks. Most of you here in Rutherford County may know these folks. We here at WGNS do things the old-fashioned way. We start with ladies first, okay? So, Sonia, how are you?
I'm doing just great.
Good. Glad you could make it tonight. I appreciate it.
Trying to make sure I've got this microphone correct.
Well, here. Dalton will coach you along.
I know he'll, it. He'll I'm watching his every move.
Tom Frost, how are you tonight?
Ed, I couldn't be much better. Thank you very much for asking.
Very good. Very good. Kirk, you've been with me before. Good to see you again.
It's good to be back, Ed. Thanks for having us.
Glad to have you. We're trying to be as thorough as we can. Let everybody have at least one shot on. Like I said, we've had four of the other candidates. You all make seven, and we'll have the other two next week. So to get you on and get to let people know who you are and where you come from and why you have chosen to subject yourself to this
this suffering.
I don't know what it is. I guess you all have had animosity toward your families long or what. But I tell you this, I've seen it. I went to go vote Friday, first day. Thank goodness I remembered to go. And but there's more that goes into this than meets the eye, isn't it? I mean, Sonia?
Sure there is. There's more that goes into this. I mean, this is a really, really important position for this whole county. And, of course, that's one of the reasons I wanted to run. I have issues with not only in my personal life with relatives that have gone through the court system,
right. Yeah.
But in regards to how I've seen this go on, and
right.
there's much that can be changed, which of course the judicial system here knew that. That's why they've opened up this position.
Well, I think you're correct, and Tom, I know you agree with that. I mean, we need this position. I think this is a positive move for Rutherford County.
This position is desperately needed, Ed, and the person to run this position is also in desperate need. And you brought up something I was thinking about this particular weekend, because this is when early voting started.
Right.
This is local government. This is a
sure.
position that people actually have some control over, and I'm sad to say this, but Rutherford Countyans are not getting out and voting. Like I at least think they should.
I know.
Local government is very important. This job is very important.
Kirk, before we go to a break.
You know, Sonia and
Ryan.
Tom both put it very well, you know, and kind of point on what Tom said is, I don't take offense to it, but we just don't go out and vote in this county for some reason. And in particular, my generation, the under 40 crowd, you know, we seem to be the ones.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Tom and I were talking before y'all got here, and I'm 58 years old. I've voted since I was 18. To tell you where I'm coming, the last date I had was during the Carter administration, okay? So that should tell you a lot.
The last date.
The last date I had, that was during the Carter administration. That'll tell you where I'm coming from. But, I mean, it is people. I've voted in every election I could possibly vote in, you know, that I know of. I don't think I've missed any elections at local, national.
Yeah, and you know, my generation seems to be the one that puts it out on social media and everything, and they're not the ones voting. And it kind of drives you a little crazy, but get out there and vote, people.
Please do. We're going to talk more with these fine candidates after we go to a break at 2 minutes, 6 minutes, 6 minutes after, from our two fine sponsors, J. Mullins Jewelers and Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits. Back with you in a minute. You know, Jeff Mullins is a multi-generational family-owned jewelry store. J. Mullins Jewelry and Gifts, excellent selection of bridal jewelry, gold, diamond, and gemstone jewelry, silver jewelry, also offering a huge selection of watches from Luminex, Citizen, Seiko, Pulsar, gifts for any and all occasions. And also, expert jewelry repair by Jeff's dad, Mr. Charles Mullins. I can't tell you the number of times he's fixed watches for me. New batteries, bracelets adjusted, all of the whole nine yards. Visit their website at www.jmullinsjewelry.com, or you can go see them in person there at the store at 352 West Northfield Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, or you can give them a call at 615-962-7164. That's 615-962-7164. And again, that website is jmullinsjewelry.com. Right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. J. Mullins Jewelry and Gifts. Excellent selection of bridal jewelry. Again, gold, diamond, gemstone jewelry. Check them out.
Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits. The finest selection of wines in this county, maybe even the entire state. Did you know that Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits has their own wine cellar? Their address is 3016 South Church Street here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Also known to us locals as Shelbyville Highway or Highway 231. Located in the IGA Shopping Center, phone number is 615-907-9000. Ted Robertson and his family, and we do mean family-owned. Spotlessly clean store with the friendliest and most knowledgeable staff. You know what goes with this, what wine goes with that. Call Ted and arrange a wine tasting for your office or party, and Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits has got what you need. And we beg all of you, do not drink and drive. Please do not drink and drive. And if you do drink, please drink responsibly. And don't forget to check out their website, MurfreesboroWineAndSpirits.com.
The BI program now returns. Now back to your host, Edwin Lee Raymer.
Thank you, Dalton Barrett. Back with the PI Show. Glad if you're tuning in. I want to have some calls tonight for these fine candidates. We're going to start with Sonia Henderson first. Sonia, you've been a trial attorney for, 28 years. Tell us about yourself and how you come to subject yourself to this type
to
of
this?
Scrutiny.
Why I'm here?
Why you're, running for General Sessions Judge.
All right. Well, okay. History of Sonia Henderson. So, my mother's an immigrant. I'm half Icelandic.
Okay.
My father is Texas, Tennessean type. His name's Wofford, like Wofford College.
Right.
He went to University of Texas. He graduated engineering. He met my mother at George Washington Law School. That's where they got married. He became the head of NASA's legal counsel. Back then in the 60s, NASA was big in Huntsville, Alabama.
Sure.
We moved from Washington, D.C. to Huntsville, Alabama. I'm the oldest of six children. Okay. We lived in Huntsville. My dad retired and decided to buy a farm in Lynchburg, Tennessee. That's how I came up here.
Okay.
He bought a farm in Lynchburg, Tennessee, and personally, I was 18 years old and went to Lynchburg, Tennessee and went, what the heck? And I found a little road map and found my way to Murfreesboro, Tennessee in my Volkswagen Beetle with my little Pioneer stereo system. Went to MTSU and stayed. Never left. I've never left here. I've been here since 1976. So when you say, these headphones are bothering me. So when you say that, you know, where are you from? I've been here since 1976. I've never left. Right. And I've been an attorney since I graduated law school, what, in 1980? I passed the bar within a couple months. Started practicing law. It's been this way ever since. Sounds like an affliction. And and I've been doing this. And I have a law firm. I have associates. It's great. It's just that I've seen things go on where I personally, truly want this position as judge.
Okay.
I feel I can make a difference. I wouldn't do this if I didn't feel like I could make a difference in this county, and I could make a difference as a judge with my experience, not only as a lawyer, but just with the everyone that I've seen go through the system as it is now, and how it needs improvement.
Well, I think we all are in agreement on that. And when Kirk was on the first time, we'd spoken about this, the previous people that handled these probation cases and all that, and let's just let that water under the bridge, they're gone. But I think it was time for the county to do this, and I know Mayor Burgess has been behind this 100%. He was good enough a couple of months ago to call in this show and explain what's going on, and the county took it over, and apparently things are running very smoothly. Now, you folks would know more about that than I do, but this is a position we all are in agreement of the county needed. Tom, tell us about yourself and how you got to where you are and why you're doing this.
Ed, I graduated from college in 1973 and law school in 1976 and got immediately licensed and have been practicing law now 39 years. Now,
right.
First nine or so of those years were spent up in the Tri-Cities area, and I was forming, you know, becoming a lawyer, trying to figure out which direction I wanted to head. I ended up doing mostly commercial, mostly corporate, lots of construction law at that time.
Right.
Did a lot of litigation. I have now litigated cases in 11 states, 38 counties of the state of Tennessee. I've seen numerous judges and seen how they act. Now, roughly 15 years ago, almost 16, I started in the public defender's office as an assistant, associate.
I knew you were there when I first got to know you.
Yes, yeah. And had 10 great years there, 10 great years, but I was in this General Sessions Court every day for 10 years. Now, don't let's forget, we all know this, of course, but this position is a criminal law judgeship. Experience in the criminal law is absolutely necessary. My opponents here have some experience in criminal law. I know Sonia has not practiced much in the last 15 years in criminal law. Kurt, of course, has only been practicing 12 years and does spend his time in criminal court, and it's appreciated the service that he provides to people. But in my opinion, the absolute experience is what's necessary, because things are going to have to take place quickly. We've got too many people in jail. We've got too many people on the docket. So this judge has got to step in immediately and deal with issues. The first, of course, are bonding issues, and the second is proper arraignment. And then you have to know the substantive law of crimes. You have to know what an assault is or what a drug possession is or what a burglary is. Then you have to know the procedure to deal with those things. And there are some customs, some habits in Rutherford County. Some need to be changed. Some of them we still need to deal with in that way. In the last 15, 16 years, I've spent almost every day in that court. I've seen what I perceive as good things, and I've seen what I perceive as things that need some change, and I really, really want to do that. I think I'm skilled. I think I'm experienced. I think I'd be a good choice for this General Sessions judge.
Good. Very well. Kirk, tell us your story.
My story, I was born in 1978, you know, so these guys, they've been around longer than I have. Yeah, and that's one thing I've heard.
He's just bragging. Sonia, he's just bragging, Tom. He's trying to make us all feel.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I actually have run into on the campaign trail is the fact that, you know, people have looked at me and said, are you old enough to be a judge? And I point out to them that...
Are you old enough?
Yeah, by law, yes, I am old enough. But experience, there's only one candidate who has more experience than me, and that's only because he's older than me, and that's Tom. And I can't do anything about my age. And I was telling the story earlier that one of the first hearings I did was with Tom, and Tom's been a great mentor for me and a lot of lawyers in this town.
Very nice of you to say.
And one thing I can say about all the candidates is I think whoever got the job would do a good job with it. But I was born and raised in Murfreesboro, went to Christiana, grew up out south side of town, went to Riverdale and was not planning on ever living in Murfreesboro, but it was the old Murfreesboro at that time. And
true.
Moved to Florida for a short time after high school and moved back here to go to MTSU and met a girl, and the girl was from Shelbyville, and she wasn't going back there, but she wasn't going too far from there. So,
right, okay.
So we are here, and we love it here, and this is our home, and it'll always be our home. We have two daughters, Charlie Ann and Kerrigan, that go to Barfield Elementary. My wife was a teacher at Barfield until January this year, and she had an opportunity to make a career change, and she's now a magazine editor for VIP Murfreesboro. So this is where we put our roots, and this is what we want to do. And Tom hit a lot of great points. This job needs somebody that can come in and hit the ground running, and that's what I think I also bring to the table. Is I can come in, I can hit the ground running because I do have the knowledge and the near daily experience with this court. So it needs somebody that can understand what's going on, what has happened, and what not the things that have not necessarily been bad about the court, but the things that we see as practicing attorneys that need to be changed, that we can take and use our experience with those items and take those and make the changes that we can with this court. And not only hear our dockets here, but you know, we've got a situation where we've got deputies and MPD and Laverne and these officers standing and waiting in court.
Right.
And even the victims and the defendants, they're sitting in court for hours and hours. And it's not the judge's fault. It's just that's the way it's been, and that's the way the docket is. So we need somebody that can go from their court over at the jail, get over here and help these judges with their docket. Let's cut the wait time out. Let's run an efficient courtroom. Let's save the tax dollars some money or pay her some money with the overtime we're having to pay the officers. We don't need cops at every court appearance. We have a very capable law enforcement entity across this county that can write down in a warrant what's going on. We've got very capable DAs who can read what's going on. If we can't work it out, let's specially set a hearing and bring them in so they're not missing time on the streets protecting our citizens, and let's also cut the wait time down for the individuals that are in the court.
Very good. I will say this, of all the candidates, all of you that I know, and this has always been, you know, my father taught me one thing. Our father, I have two brothers, by the way. You may not ever finish number one, but if you've got the best people, that's what you've got going for you. And all of you are good people. I know that. You don't spend 20, 30 years practicing law unless you've got something going for you. I mean, you really do. You can't run a firm. You've got to be there every day. Your name's on the billboard. I mean, it's a heavy responsibility, but all of you are fine folks, and that goes a long way with me. They all are, folks, believe me, and they do have a lot going for them, and I'm glad you all are here tonight. Sonia, where did you get your law degree?
Nashville School of Law.
Nashville School of Law. Okay. Tom?
I got mine at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Kirk?
I went to the Appalachian School of Law in a little town called Grundy, Virginia.
Grundy, Virginia. I've never heard of that one.
You know, I hadn't either. I went to law school there.
Wow.
And,
never had.
It was a great place for me to go to law school because there's nothing there but the law school, so I didn't have anything to do with study.
I tried a case in Grundy, Virginia in the 1970s.
Really?
Yes.
Telling what kind of case that was.
It was a criminal law.
I guarantee you, it didn't change much from 1970 to 2001 when I got there. It was probably still the same place with a few less coal mines.
Well, you're talking to a guy from coal country because I'm originally from Western Kentucky, so coal built Western Kentucky. And, you know, we know where you're coming from there. And, of course, Virginia is famous for it, West Virginia. And even... didn't we used to have some coal mines over in East Tennessee? I think there were some veins of coal over there.
Upper East Tennessee, for sure.
Crossville, Tennessee.
Did they?
Open.
Okay, yeah. We're going to go to our next break. When we come back, we're going to talk some more with these fine folks. You're listening to the PI Show with me, Evan Lee Raymer. Back with you in 2 minutes. Play us into that, Dalton. We'll be right back.
sour news caused one man to turn his life around, and it led to sweet, sweet success.
I'm Bob Smith.
I'm Greg Anestis.
And this is
Why Didn't I Think of that?
Coming up, how a cancer survivor rediscovered everybody's favorite all-natural sweetener.
There's a price war in the insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call the Term Lifeline right now and see if you can save 40%. $500,000 plans and up, that's our specialty, even great smokers' rates. Protect your family today. Call the Term Lifeline right now for a free quote. 866-549-TERM, 866-549-TERM, 866-549-TERM.
In 2006, David Lukes was married, active, and perfectly healthy.
And then he was diagnosed with cancer.
Thankfully, it was in its earliest stages and surgery did save the day.
But his personal health became increasingly important.
He began consulting doctors and nutritionists and was given an article about the health benefits of honey.
Honey is not only an unrefined sweetener, it contains vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, and it boosts the immune system.
As a longtime PepsiCo executive, Lukes had a few ideas on where to put the sweet, healthy nectar.
He teamed with college buddy Steve Zimmerman and started Honey Drop Beverages.
Low-calorie teas and juices sweetened with all-natural, unrefined honey.
Within 8 months, Lukes had his product on the shelves of local health stores
and expanded to Whole Food stores nationwide.
With every sale, Honey Drop donates money to local beekeepers to fight the dwindling honeybee population.
So, how's the buzz going?
Well, this might sting a little bit, Greg. Just a few years after launching, Honey Drop is looking at $3.5 million in revenue.
Zowie!
David Lukes exemplifies an axiom featured on our website, thinkofthat.net. Pursue your passion.
Low-calorie health drinks sweetened with real honey. Now why didn't I think of that?
Visit us at thinkofthat.net.
The PI program now returns. Now back to your host, Edwin Lee Rand.
That is Shinedown with the old Carole King classic. They did a good job on the remake of that. Sonia, get over here and sit down. You're going to hurt your back. You can't dance like that anymore.
Okay, let me put on my headphones.
We have an issue with one of our candidates that don't like the headphones here.
Yeah.
So, Scott Walker, please put on some new headphones for Sonia, okay?
Yeah, and they're not backwards.
Okay. Edwin Lee Raymer with you, PI Show. You wonder how a PI ever got involved in something like this. Well, you get to know these people, and we want to do our part, too, here. And WGNS is big on being a family station and a station for the community. So, folks, and Tom and I was talking, and this affects all of you. This mess today down in Baton Rouge, 3 more officers dead. Tom, I'll start with you. Me and you were talking. What are you thinking on it? I mean, it doesn't affect your camp, but I mean, I think it should be talked about. We're going to have to do something.
Let's do this as a generalization first, Ed. judicial candidates, by ethics rules, are not supposed to comment on ongoing cases. Now, this is not really a case yet.
Right.
So everything I'm going to say is just a generality. This is a terrible, terrible thing to have happened in this country. We seem to have gotten at odds with each other over numerous and myriad number of problems. Can't list them all. Don't even know what they all are. I have actually checked with some friends of mine who are younger than I am, who are probably more in tune with the sociology of the day, just to see what they think about this whole thing. But somehow we have got to come to peace together, and we've got to come to terms together, and we need to start running this country the way we used to and all live together again. You know, you and I were talking, we're much more similar age. We have lost the tenets, the principles that even Martin Luther King told us about in the late 60s and that
True.
Period of time.
Right.
I mean, he was a peaceable man, and he preached peace. He preached change by peace, similar to Gandhi when he was fighting quarreling, I'll say, with the British Empire.
Sure.
But we need those ideas back again. If we can resolve these problems, if we just sit down and talk to each other, but we can't do it with rocks and bottles and bullets.
No. Kirk, comment?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to say that I've ever been in a situation
sure.
like that.
Right.
But on January 16th, 2002, in Grundy, Virginia, I was walking from my car to the kind of the student union area where my law school was, and you started hearing the pops. And a lot of people didn't know what they were, and I remember a friend of mine, Matt, asked Matt Harvey, he's an attorney in West Virginia, what is that? I said, that's a gun.
You know, if you ever fire, you know,
yeah, and,
you know what it is.
And one of my classmates had gone the upstairs of the school and executed the dean of the university and executed one of our professors.
Great day.
And then ran through the student union, seemingly just shooting whatever he could find to shoot. Killed one of my classmates and wounded two other people, I believe. So I have been in a situation where, you know, things are hectic and things happen.
Wow.
And I relate it to, it's not a gun issue, because in that certain situation, a gun actually stopped what was going on. It's a human issue, and
right.
it's a people issue, and we've got to learn that, you know, even if you're in law enforcement and you're under a pressure situation, you got to make the right decision. I don't know that I could do their job. I don't know that I can make the right decision in that situation. I think that's different from being a judge. But you've got to look, even that when that stuff happens, there's a better way than ambushing the police officers in the middle of the road or shooting them from a sniper position when they're
like
when
Dallas,
they're,
yeah.
like Dallas,
yeah.
where they're just trying to protect the people. So, you know, there's better ways to do it. And until we as a society learn to forgive, and I think that's the big issue is
yeah.
we don't forgive anymore. And if we can learn to forgive, then I think we can get through some of these issues, and we've got to treat each other like people.
Right.
It's that simple. If you just treat each other like people, we'll be okay.
Well, I think you're talking about basically, you know, it is a humanity. Yeah, it's a human issue. Sonia, your opinion?
Take the darn air. All right. I got the headphones
okay.
off.
Okay.
I can't take it any longer. He's correct in that point. You know, people do need to learn how to forgive. The problem is people never forget. You don't forget. And so
right. yeah.
this comes up time and time again. And it has to do with, it appears to be, that there's just a lot of raging going on in this county. Not only this county, in the whole nation. Everyone's
sure.
raging.
Yeah.
Everyone's ill.
Well, I think a lot of people have watched too much television. I mean, I go in restaurants sometimes, and there's
it's
a family.
It's the reality show.
I know, and there's family singing. I know you all see this, too. And everybody's got a device, whether it be a pad or a phone or whatever. They're not talking to each other anymore.
Right.
I've got to where I leave my phone in the car. I'll tell you what I did one day. I had to go into Nashville. Accidentally left my phone at home. It's one of the most peaceful drives I've had in years.
You know? Yeah.
Maybe we need to put the phones down. And I know they're handy, and I care. We all carry one. We've all got one with us tonight. But, you know, and Kirk, you're right. To start talking to people and communicating again. And, of course, I must say, and we all agree, it starts at home. I mean,
you're right.
It starts at the house. And I think, I don't know about Sonny, but I think me and Tom came from an era where, you know, if you got out of line, Mom or Dad one would put the Board of Education on the seat of understanding.
And sure.
And I don't think we were any none the worse
for it.
You know,
one of the tough
you know.
Things, Ed, that I've had is I've got, my daughters are 10 and 8. And it's,
oh, yeah.
Do you shield them from this and from what's going on? Or And my oldest, she kind of understands, and she'll ask questions about it. So, you know, it becomes, how do you explain it to them? And all you can really do is say, honey, there's people in the world that need help.
And, yeah, they need
and,
help.
And we yeah. want to work to help them no matter what we do.
Well, here, back to this very court, people with drug issues, people, and this is one thing Mayor Burgess said, we've got to come up with a program, and that's one thing I want to talk to you all about, is to get these people some help. I'm talking about people that truly have a problem. Now, everyone makes a stupid mistake. You go out here, you've had one too many. You may get, you know, but if you've got someone that's habitually being picked up
sure.
under the influence, drunk, pills, the opioid epidemic is horrendous.
Sure
it's,
is.
It's terrible. Y'all are probably dealing with these people every day that are hooked on these things. And we've got to get these people some help, you know. And that is one problem I think that everybody, all the judges have considered looking at. We don't know what is the, there's not a pat answer to it, and I understand that. But, Kirk, any comment on that?
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. Something has to be done. You know, we've got a DUI court. We've got a drug court. We've got a veterans court that's ran so far, been great. We've got a district attorney, and Eric Farmer, who kind of vets those people. He's appointed a veteran himself, so that's worked out well. We need a mental health court. But with all that said, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact that there are some people that need to be punished as well.
We'll get to it when we get back. Dalton, play us to a break, please, at 31 after. There you are, Sonya. Ed Rainer of the P.I. Show, back with you in 2 minutes. Multi-generational family-owned jewelry store. J. Mullins Jewelry and Gifts. Excellent selection of bridal jewelry, gold, diamond, and gemstone jewelry, silver jewelry. Also offering a huge selection of watches from Luminex, Citizen, Seiko, Pulsar. Gifts for any and all occasions. And also, expert jewelry repair by Jeff's dad, Mr. Charles Mullins. I can't tell you the number of times he's fixed watches for me. New batteries, bracelets adjusted, all of the whole nine yards. Visit their website at www.jmullinsjewelry.com, or you can go see them in person there at the store at 352 West Northfield Boulevard, right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Or you can give them a call at 615-962-7164. That's 615-962-7164. And again, that website is jmullinsjewelry.com. Right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. J. Mullins Jewelry and Gifts. Excellent selection of bridal jewelry. Again, gold, diamond, gemstone jewelry. Check them out.
Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits. The finest selection of wines in this county, maybe even the entire state. Did you know that Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits has their own wine cellar? Their address is 3016 South Church Street here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Also known to us locals as Shelbyville Highway or Highway 231. Located in the IGA Shopping Center, phone number is 615-907-9000. Ted Robertson and his family, and we do mean family-owned. Spotlessly clean store with the friendliest and most knowledgeable staff. You know what goes with this, what wine goes with that. Call Ted and arrange a wine tasting for your office or party, and Murfreesboro Wine and Spirits has got what you need. And we beg all of you, do not drink and drive. Please do not drink and drive. And if you do drink, please drink responsibly. And don't forget to check out their website, MurfreesboroWineAndSpirits.com.
The PI program now returns. Now back to your host, Edwin Lee Raymond.
The P.I. Show, me, Edwin Lee Raymer, Sonya Henderson, Tom Frost, Kirk Catron, three candidates for General Sessions. Judge, you're here. Tom, get over here. You're going to hurt your back now. Sonya, I got her settled down. You can't dance like that anymore. This is not American Bandstand. Turn his mic on. He's got something he wants to say, Dalton. Okay. We're going to talk about the court system. We want to talk about this mental illness issue, which... if one of you are elected, you're going to be jumping right in the middle of it. Tom, you want to lead us off?
Ed, we were broaching that at Kurt's last comment. And I want to say this, and I suppose I'm bragging on myself, but I've been around for a long time. I had a mental health case in 1978, first one I ever had. I have dealt with mentally ill, mentally afflicted people off and on now for 39 years. And seriously, nobody else can say that. I mean, we have... a couple of candidates in this judgeship, running for this judgeship, that have no criminal law experience.
Right.
And as a result of that, have little to no understanding of the mental problems that confront people. As a public defender, I probably referred around 250 people or so to the Rutherford County Guidance Center, had them examined by Dr. Stuber, and all, I can say this, all of the people I ever referred over there had a mental health problem. Now, we couldn't resolve that problem because the court system simply was not set up to handle that problem. But you have to have age, you have to have experience to have experience. You cannot create it any other way. You have to have been there, you have to have done that. You have to have dealt with those people. And some people, Ed, quite frankly, are not mentally ill and commit crimes anyway.
Right.
You've got to factor in that situation, too. Some of these people do have drug problems. Some of them have alcohol problems. Some of them don't have any kind of problems at all, except they want what you've got.
Right.
But
they want to blame everyone else for their problems.
In spite of all of that, I think when you look at a criminal defendant, a defendant in a criminal court, you have got to see that person as an individual because right. that person is who the Constitution is designed to protect. The amendments right. to the Constitution were written for one man and one woman versus the government. So you've got to make sure that their rights are protected. You've got to make sure they have a fair trial. You've got to understand who you're dealing with as best as you possibly can, and you have to try in that way to achieve a fair result. And I think I'm the person with the experience to do that.
Kirk, your comments on this very same thing.
It's a fine line, Ed. It
yes.
is. And before I answer that, we've had a couple attorneys here in the last couple of weeks. Brad Hornsby had a little accident on his motorcycle and broke his leg, and then yesterday a friend of mine, Derek Howard, was working on his ladder and fell off and pretty much shattered his leg, so he's in the hospital now. So if we could, you know, send prayers out to those two guys that they get
yes.
better soon and get back in the courtroom where they're both very, very fine lawyers. So, but on the topic we're talking about is, it's a fine line between distinguishing is there a problem, what can we do about the problem, and if there's not a problem, what do we do with them? We can't lose sight of the fact that the adult court, when you're over 18, is for punishment. Okay, that's why we have jails.
Right.
And if an individual does not have a chronic record, or if an individual does not have a pattern of behavior that warrants them getting into one of these programs, the DUI court or something like, or something similar, or hopefully a mental health court in the future, then they don't need to be in that program. You know, that we've got to
right.
draw the line. And I, you know, even though I'm not the oldest candidate, I do believe I do have the experience doing that. Like I said, I'm one of the two that's been in this court. We have some candidates who have done nothing but watch court since their entire career. So,
sure.
Watching court doesn't get you the experience. It's kind of like I can watch a pro baseball player hit a baseball, but doesn't mean I can go out there and do it.
yeah.
You know, so
right.
You know, it's finding that fine line of treatment versus punishment. And quite frankly, there's some people that need help, and there's some people that need to just be in jail. And there's some people that don't
right.
need either one of them.
Yeah.
You know, they might have messed up once, and they don't need
right.
to be in jail,
yeah.
but they don't need to be in the mental health court or any of those other courts
right.
either because
sure.
they're not to that level. And before we go just throwing tax dollars away, putting everybody into a special court, then we need to make sure that there's actually a problem. I remember a conversation I had in Washington, D.C. with Judge Daniel before we were getting sworn in last year at the Supreme Court. He said, you know, I hear Davidson County's they're developing a business court. Whatever happened to just having court? And
right. yeah.
you know, that's kind of a new thing that's happened with, I guess, my generation is they're pushing these separate courts. And I think we got to go back to the day where, look, let's give people some options. Let's give them the help if they need it. But at the same time, this is court, and if we need to punish them, let's punish them.
Right. Yeah. Business court. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Sonia.
What is business court? That's a new one on me.
You'd have to go to Nashville to find out, I guess.
I don't know.
No, seriously,
still
I don't know.
Exists?
Yeah, I don't know. Business court. Well, you can take care of tax problems or what? I don't know.
okay, here's my take on this. This new position, anyway, is that let's talk about mental illness and committing crimes.
Okay, do me a favor. We're going to go to break for 30 seconds, for 2 minutes. We'll start with you when we come back.
Well, then you play a good song.
Dalton, take us to a break and play some music this lady can dance to, please. That's a little Eddie, man. That's a track I laid down before I come in. Evan Lee Ringer, the PI Show, back with you in 2 minutes.
keeping the pulse of our community, First National Bank of Murfreesboro's Man on the Street Report. This is Freda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We'd love for you to come by and visit us. We're located at 2230 Mercury Boulevard here in Murfreesboro. Always delighted to see you and always have a nice warm cookie to greet you. First National Bank of Murfreesboro. Member FDIC. Give us a call today at 615-494-4200. Come and see why there is a difference at First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
Each year it seems like students have to take more and more standardized tests. So I asked teachers what they thought about standardized testing.
All right, at one time, standardized testing may have been something you could justify in the schools, but now that we have spread it all the way out from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade, and we are testing them every couple weeks, standardized testing has kind of become null and void, and we've taken it too far, and now it really just doesn't have a lot of meaning for the teachers or for the students. So it really is an indication of talent on either level, and therefore it's a waste of time and money.
I think a fix for it would be to test kids maybe every 3 years. I don't think there's a need to test kids every year. I think if you test kids every 3 years, you kind of get the same feel. You're getting the same results. You're just not doing it every year, so you're giving them a break. Also, it's going to help the teachers if you'd only do that, because teachers don't have to teach to the test.
I think it takes up a lot of our time. It takes a lot of our class time from a teaching standpoint, trying to prepare for them, and I think there's probably better ways to go about it.
I'm for it sometimes and against it a lot of times. Just each individual student's different than everybody. When you standardize things, you're putting them in the norm, and we need to make it more fitted to their standards or their needs more so than just a standardized test.
Those were your opinions, and with that, I'm Dalton Barrett, your man on the street. The PI program now returns. Now back to your host, Edwin Lee Raymer.
And we are back with you, the P.I. Show. Thank you, Mr. Dalton Barrett. Much appreciated. Kirk Catron, Tom Frost. Sonia.
Yes.
Sonia, tell us, you wanted to talk a bit about the mental illness issue, and that will probably concern this judgeship as well.
Sure it will. There's the people that get arrested in this county, and there's a lot of arrests, which is why our jails are overcrowded. This is why we even have this judgeship going on. And I've done a lot of domestic work, too, for the last 28 years. And in domestic work, you do see a lot of mental illness.
Sure.
Probably more there than even in criminal law. So
Right. You've
got to decipher. And this is one of the main things with this new position is to try and decipher. When you've got this individual in front of you and you're trying to keep the jails from being so overcrowded, is this person a danger to society? Is this person a repeat offender of some sort? Or is this somebody that's a true drug addict that needs to be in the drug court? Or is this somebody who's mentally ill and needs a psychiatric evaluation so we can better figure out what to do with them other than just jail them? Jailing people for every offense is not the answer. And it's become the answer, unfortunately, in this county, or we wouldn't have such overcrowdedness. People have got to be basically examined as to what they truly need. Do they need to stay in jail? Do they need to come out? Do they need to be going into some type of drug court? Do they need to be mentally evaluated? We need all of that. The other thing we need, I think, is more of a video conferences going on. Instead of having these people transported, you can have them on video, you know. You don't have to transport
sure.
them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Big, big money saver there.
Right.
Why are we doing that? That's just basically coming into the modern ages to me.
Well, now I think this judgeship is going to be set up at the sheriff's office. They're going to, I don't know if they'll, do they have facilities out there already available?
They don't yet. We keep hearing how they're going to do it. And we actually do video arraignments in circuit court already to save the transportation. But it's going to be at the jail. I think we've all heard probably a different location of where they're going to put it. My big issue is I don't care where you put it out there. Make sure it's open to the public because they have an opportunity to be there.
Sure.
And then
sure.
I think that's something else the jail and the county's got to figure out is got to screen these people, put them through security, make sure everybody's safe inside the courtroom,
sure.
wherever that courtroom might be.
That's what it's come to. And I don't like it any better than anyone else, but I go through the screening process just like any other person does. But you've got to have it.
True.
You have to have it. And it's like Tom and I were talking before y'all got it. It's just what society, it's what we've come down to. So, you know, I kind of think the guys that carry the guns overall do a pretty good job.
I agree.
You know, men and women. And, you know, they've got a job to do. It's like I was telling you earlier, I've never understood talking about one of the candidates was having a rally somewhere. It's been a couple of months ago. And one of the opposition, some of his fans, so to speak, and the candidate is inside the arena, and they're out there throwing rocks and bottles at the police. Why are you throwing rocks and bottles at these men and women that are just doing their job? What purpose is that? I don't know. No, those are people that need to have charges filed
yeah.
against them. I mean, you know, you don't assault someone like, you know, not a police officer, a fellow citizen, or anyone, you know. But, I don't know. Just crazy people. We were talking, Kurt, about your situation in 2002. You said that's the day you went and got a carry permit.
That was the day I decided to get one. You know, I after that happened.
What happened? Tell them what happened.
Well,
tell
I mean,
us that.
No. You know, we already kind of told us. Somebody came into the law school and killed several people and some classmates of mine. And, you know, the first thing was obviously I want to talk to my family. And they
sure.
canceled class, and I came back here. And I remember my mom saying, you know, you need to go talk to somebody. Well, here I am, 21, 22 years old. I was like, I don't need to talk to anybody. And,
sure.
Like moms tend to do, even when you're that age, she made me do it. And I did, and I felt a lot better about it. And then a good friend of my father, Sonny Miller in Nashville, I think they had talked, and I had expressed a desire to have a weapon. And that's kind of the day that I decided, you know, if something does arise in the future, I want to be ready to protect myself. And I was saying, what stopped that shooting is there was two classmates of mine, one of them, Michael Gross, he's a former cop in North Carolina. He still had his weapon and his bulletproof vest, and he went to his car, had enough time to go get it, and he stopped it. And that's ultimately what stopped more people from getting killed. Now, I'm not sitting here saying everybody should run out and get a gun, because that's
sure.
not everybody needs a gun.
Right.
But in a situation like that, a weapon stopped more people from getting hurt. And we hear all the bad things about weapons. And again, I'm not some guy that just goes toting guns everywhere. But
sure.
You know, I tell people, keep yourself protected. And if you're respectful to the police, I was telling you guys earlier, I've been stopped a few times for speeding. And and the first thing I always tell them, because
I Tom got you off once, didn't he?
He wanted to charge way too much. I couldn't afford it. But I tell the cops, you know, the first thing I do, put both hands on the wheel, and I tell them,
sure.
I've got a loaded weapon right beside me in my car. And,
right.
And every single time, it has been respectful. Now, can I say, do I look like a threat? Well, probably not. But I tell them that because I want them to know. And I don't know enough about the situation in Minnesota where that
sure.
apparently may have happened. But they're respectful of that. And like you said, you got people throwing stuff at police officers. Something bad's going to happen. You know,
sure.
You throw a rock at anybody, something
sure.
bad is probably going to happen.
Pick it up and throw it back at
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I just don't understand. I don't know where all the hatred is coming from when you're throwing rocks and bottles at a police officer because your candidate's not doing well in the polls. Well,
yeah,
that's
not the cop's fault.
It's not the police officer's fault. I just don't understand. And I guess some of us never will.
Right.
I mean, but... I told you before we went on the air, I had a person who were talking about didn't know what it was like to be a black person, didn't know what it was like to be a person of color. And the commentator said, and also, you don't know what it's like to be a police officer.
Right. And we don't know what it's like
to
be in those situations.
Yeah.
You know, I went to high school, played football at Riverdale, and had a lot of black friends. And there was never an issue. It was like there was never any animosity between us. And I see my friends today from school, and they're still not animosity. And it's just, I think it's a people problem.
You got that right. We're going to our last break. Dalton, if you'd play us into it, please. And this is Edwin Lee Raymer, the PI Show. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
I'm Lee Colvin of Edward Jones, and here's the latest market news from the Edward Jones Financial Desk.
Good day, Rutherford County. I'm Dalton Barrett, in for Lee Colvin. Now let's take a look at your stocks. U.S. stocks rose on Thursday after the announcement of stronger-than-expected earnings from major banks. In economic news, U.S. producer prices rose in the month of June. In bond market news, prices for U.S. Treasuries were down at the close on Thursday. In the S&P 500, the best-performing sector was financials, while the worst-performing was utilities. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 134.29 points at 18,506.41 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 Index was up 12.75 points at 2,165.18 points. The NASDAQ Composite Index was up 28.33 points at 5,034.06 points. Volume on the New York Stock Exchange was moderate, with 770.62 million shares traded. Advancers outnumbered decliners by roughly a 3-2 margin. In commodity markets, the spot price of gold fell $8.93 to $1,333.76. The spot price of silver rose 10 cents to $20.26, and crude oil prices rose 74 cents to $45.49. The 30-year Treasury yield closed at 2.25%, and the 10-year Treasury yield finished at 1.53%. For News Radio WGNS, I'm Dalton Barrett.
This is Lee Colvin of Edward Jones, member SIPC, bringing you the daily market news here on News Radio WGNS. I'd love to talk to you about your financial needs. My office is located in the Public Shopping Center on the corner of Rutherford and Broad, or you can call us at 615-907-7056. Thanks for listening to today's Wall Street to Church Street Report.
The PI program now returns. Now back to your host, Edwin Lee Raymer.
All right. For our last 8 minutes, Kirk, will you punch Tom and wake him up, please? I think it's past his bedtime. What did you say? He had your mic off. I want to hear.
It's past my bedtime. This judgeship is going to start, by the way, we think at 7:30 in the morning, so it necessitates being used to going to bed early and getting up early.
7:30 in the morning?
Yes, this judgeship needs to have business partially done, at least, before they start court in Murfreesboro at the regular courthouse downtown. So
right.
Take care of the people that came in that night, take care of the people that are recently taken care of, and... my understanding, at least, Ed, is we're going to have a district attorney there. We're going to have a public defender there. There's, of course, got to be room. I think Kirk brought this up. The Constitution requires this court to be open and be public.
Of course. Yeah.
So there's room for other lawyers. There's room for witnesses and people like that. So this court is going to start much earlier than the one up here does. And the purpose, of course, is to free up the deputies who have to work at the jail with those prisoners to get them ready to transport other prisoners that have to be brought over to the court for whatever reason. And, of course, some of them be brought to circuit court, not general sessions court. So, again, you've got to have someone with the experience to know how to get this stuff done instantly. And I'm going to range this down for you. We have lawyers who are running for this judgeship. The newest one has been practicing law a mere 7 years, not done any criminal cases that I know of. The next one is 8 years and not done too many criminal cases. Then we got Kurt at 12 years. We've got a candidate with 15 years who's never been an active lawyer that I know of, and I've been in that court almost every day for 15 years and never seen that person there. Coming on up the ladder, we've got Lisa Ashad, then we got Sonia, then we got Larry
Don't
Brandon.
Don't start on me.
And then we got me. And I am by far the most experienced person and the most knowledgeable in criminal law and ready to do this job.
Very good. You know, how many, Kirk, I think we talked about this before. This jail was built to house how many inmates? Do you know?
950.
Yeah, I think it was 950, and they were at one point routinely at a little over 1,000.
No, 9/11.
You know, so no. It's some of those might be going to the workhouse, in
sure.
and out.
Sure.
You know, how many of those people are there from contracts from other counties? I mean,
true.
That's something else we've got to kind of
right.
look at. That's kind of up to the sheriff's department to do, or the sheriff. So, you know, this position will take somebody who's come in with a record that's not bad, or it's not a violent crime. They cannot make bond. We'll do a pretrial release program where they will be monitored. Though I do have some concerns about monitoring someone who's not been convicted of a crime. And I think there's a fine line, just like there is with the mental health issues and everything else, is monitoring somebody who's not been convicted of anything. But letting people, I hate to say letting people out of jail because it sounds like we're just letting them go, but looking at an individual, I did have a client, I think we talked about the last time I was on, is he was charged with an underage consumption, an offense that would require zero jail time, and he just couldn't make a bond. And he ended up spending about 45 days in jail because we couldn't find anybody to bond him out. And bondsmen don't want to touch a $150 bond at 2 a.m. It's not worth their time to go do it.
Whatever happened, and I know this has been a hot-button issue here in this county, whatever happened to being released on your own recognizance? Is that just not done anymore?
It's not.
Why? I mean, I heard if they could establish.
I don't think there's a checks and balances in place to do that. And, you know, this court will help with that. And that's kind of, I guess, what the pretrial release program is designed to be, is an ROR, release on your own recognizance. But, again, how are we going to design this and how are we going to operate this? And that's why it takes somebody with the experience in the criminal court who's dealt with these people. And, again, you know, Tom's right. He's got the most experience. I can't do anything about my age, but
sure.
he and I are the only two that have done this over the last 11 and a half, 12 years every day.
Right.
So it's going to take someone who knows what these individuals are facing and go through it that way. It's just they just don't do an ROR. Occasionally they do. They do it now without discussing any pending litigation or any litigation that's going on. They release violation of probation, get an ROR. But other people do not. And that's kind of what the pretrial release program is going to be designed to do.
Tom, your thoughts on it?
Well, we've got to take a long look at this, Ed. And I'm not going to knock the system what we got, but the bonds are set initially now by usually women, their commissioners. And as far as I know, the only requirement is that they have a high school degree. Now,
right.
And like I say, they do a pretty good job, and most of the time they set some fairly reasonable bonds. Sometimes they don't. So it's up to us as educated people in the field of law to look at the statutory requirements of a bond. And then the last one of those requirements, Ed, is to look at the likelihood of conviction. So you do, as I've said, you've got to understand the substantive law of the particular crime they're charged with, and then you have to understand the procedural law of how they would go through a trial if they had one. So all of those things need to be taken a look at. Release on recognizance, ROR bond, we ask for them in court, Kurt does too, and occasionally they are granted, but by that time that person's probably already been in jail 10, 11 days. So that needs to be backed up to its initial point. When the person comes in
jail, I think all of you have been in agreement
on
that, of the candidates I've talked to, that mm-hmm. you know they're sleeping on the floor and everything else out there now.
They are. And well, that makes my understanding anyway, and that,
right.
that does not need to happen. In this country.
Well, I mean, and this is what we're doing. And mm-hmm. one of the other candidates had said, we really need a fifth General Sessions judge right now. And go ahead and be proactive, because the community is going, this county is growing. What, in
yeah,
10 or 12 years, another 100,000
We really
150,000
need,
people.
In my
yeah.
opinion, Rutherford County to be its own district. And nothing against Cannon County. It's a great place, great people.
Sure.
But we lose our circuit judges, you know, a couple times a month going over there. Our chancery
right.
judge has to go over
right.
there. We need to be our own district. We've got enough people here now where we can be our own district and we can operate more efficiently. And, you know, I think it came up last year at the legislature and there was some it didn't happen because it wasn't supposed to. It didn't happen because there was some legislators who couldn't get along with each other. So
understood. Sonia, I'm going to give you the last word. We've got a minute and a half.
What do you want me to say? Vote for me? I've been listening to these two guys over here talking about their criminal history. Look, the way I feel about it,
experience, it's not history.
Oh, yeah. Experience. All right.
Tom's has been expunged.
Not history yet. All right. So, you know, this is a brand new position. It's and they're wanting new, innovative ways to handle it.
And we've got to go. We're out of time.
Hey, I'm not done.
I'm sorry. You got to be done. Dalton, take us off the air. This is Edwin Lee Reimer. It's been the PI Show. Thank all three of you for being here. Much appreciated. Best of luck to you. Talk to you next week, folks.